This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Okay, well, maybe that song kind of helps explain why people weren't necessarily the biggest Nickelback fans. There was a bit of schlock in some of their stuff, but look, Nickelback is a very popular mainstream rock band. Maybe not for everybody. And there's a lot of bands that make all kinds of different songs, all kinds of different music, like what you like, and just ignore the stuff you don't. But look, Nickelback has had a lot of success, and I think probably largely as Canadians, as Albertans, and you know, certainly for folks in Hanna, there's a lot of pride in, you know, the heights they've reached and what they've able to achieve. So there's an interesting story there just about a successful band. But there is a story there about hate and performative hate almost. Like, it wasn't just some people didn't like Nickelback. It's like some people felt they had to make a real show of not liking Nickelback or to look down on those who did. And I think you could probably point to maybe some other bands where that was kind of true. But a lot of it seemed really unique to this band. Now, it feels like maybe over the years, maybe people have found different things to get upset about. Or maybe just the fact that, you know, the band has some legacy, some longevity. Maybe there's more of a begrudging respect. Maybe there are folks out there that, yeah, you know what? I did hate them. I don't know why I hated them. They're fine. They're okay. Maybe they're even fans. So there's an interesting story there. Anyway, all of it is the subject of a new documentary at its premiere last year at the Toronto International Film Festival, but it's getting a run in cinemas worldwide, in fact, 30 countries worldwide. A two-night theatrical premiere this week, tomorrow night, and then on Saturday, including here in Calgary. The film is called Love to Hate, Nickelback. The Nickelback documentary. Joining us on the line this afternoon is Lee Brooks. He's a British filmmaker and director of the documentary. Lee, great to have you with us here. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on.
Let's start with your own connection as a British filmmaker, your connection to this Canadian band.
It was through Ben Jones, who was a DJ in the UK, and he actually played, he was the first person in the UK to play How You Remind Me. So he struck up a friendship with the band, in excess of 20 years. And in 2017, when they were recording Feed the Machine, I was employed by Ben to fly over and do an EPK, an electronic press kit, for the band. So we ended up shooting far more material than an EPK. And in fact, we realized today we never delivered the EPK. So we really had enough material to start fleshing something that was a little bit bigger than this phantom EPK that doesn't exist. And that's really how my involvement started. We're a really small team. So I think, you know, the guys appreciated that, but it wasn't kind of the usual faceless kind of crew or people that usually come along. And we just embedded ourselves in really early on and had a lot of fun getting to know the guys over the course of the first few years. It was really an amazing process. It really was.
And how did they feel about this whole exercise? Did they need convincing?
They needed convincing more about the angle of really going into and exploring the hate. I think they felt like they'd said everything they needed to say about it over the years. And I think they're quite stoic as well. So I think aside from a few blow-ups here and there, I think they've pretty much managed to keep their powder dry and ride that wave as with the success they had. So I don't think at the beginning they were too... They didn't really want to go too far into the hate at the beginning. I think that really took a couple of years before we started getting quite under the skin of that, and they opened up a little bit more.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's quite a bizarre phenomenon, honestly. I guess it helps to be successful to deal with the hate, but the hate here, it always seemed hard to explain. It almost seemed performative after a while, but I don't know. Are we able to pinpoint, first of all, the origins? Where did this come from?
I think they, you know, at the time when they really was making it big, I think the internet was just kicking off at the same point. So if you had an opinion about a band, you didn't have to write a letter, send it into a magazine. An editor might select your comment to put it on one page in a magazine, and that was your comment section. You know, then the internet kicked off, and the comment section was live. Everyone had an opinion. You could say one thing, and then someone else would agree or disagree, and then before you know it, factions are being created online between those that like and those that don't like. And I think those that don't like tend to have louder voices than people that do like, you know, certain things. I think that's probably true for the way the internet is now. I don't think that's going to change much over the next few years.
Did the band feel it ever hurt them? You know, when it sort of snowballs on social media, becomes a thing, or maybe people who like Nickelback are almost afraid to say they like Nickelback. Did they feel it in any way?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it extended to the families as well. You know, we explore that in the families. And, you know, the vitriol that some of the kids experienced was quite extreme. You know, the bullying that they received was quite full on as well. So, yeah, I do think it was, you know, it definitely has affected them over the years. A lot more than they publicly appeared to, definitely.
Did it change their approach to making music? I mean, they've always been, you know, a successful mainstream band doing sort of mainstream rock, I guess we could say. Did they feel pressure at all then to change their approach as a result of this?
No, I think they enjoy writing hits, you know, and also they've got quite heavy roots. You know, they're big fans of Slayer, Metallica, Anthrax, you know, the ZZ Top. They got, you know, Chad's an amazing musician. He's way up there. He sings, he growls on stage, he plays a guitar, he plays lead, he writes tunes. He's amazing. So I don't think it changed their approach. They just did what they always did, and that was what they felt to. And, you know, he enjoys writing ballads as much as the band enjoys writing a lot of heavy rockers as well. So I think they got a good variety. I think most bands lead with singles when they release stuff, you know, but they've always got different stuff on the albums. I don't think Nickelback's any different in that respect. But they know how to write a hook. They know how to write an earworm. And they know how to write a tune that is probably going to get under the skin of people that like other types of music. You know, they rub people up the wrong way for a number of reasons. All the right reasons and all the wrong reasons, you could say, to coin the phrase of their album.
You know, and in terms of the band themselves, they don't seem like your stereotypical rock stars. They seem like kind of grounded guys, like easygoing guys. What was your impression of them?
Oh, they're you know, four of the nicest people I've ever met. And I'm not just saying that. They're the best hosts you could hope to meet. You know, if anyone has a chance to go for a beer with Chad, I highly recommend it. Don't expect to sleep much, but, you know, you're going to have a great time and a great night. And he can't do enough for you. You know, none of them can. Their manners are impeccable. You know, they rub off on you just because of the way they are. You know, there's not many people that I've met that are like that. They genuinely are so much more than they appear to be, you know. And I think that's something they've protected over the years a little bit. But, yeah, you're not going to meet four nicer guys.
It's been interesting in Canada, and especially here in Alberta, because I think there's been a lot of that hate, almost that performative hate here. But at the same time, they're ours. They're Canadian. They're from Alberta. They're from, you know, small town Hanna, Alberta. So I think we've kind of still almost been a little more protective of them in a way, perhaps, or proud of them. What did you notice in all of this work about the Canadian-ness of the band and the Canadian connection to the band?
Well, you know, they like you say, they come from Hanna. It's a population of about 2,300, and we went there to film them play a hometown gig, you know, in their old band. I mean, if that says anything about the band, you know, that says as much about the people that live there and the fans. Everyone's extremely proud of them, you know. Obviously, you're going to get some people that aren't, and that's okay. You know, part of their success is the fact that people don't, you know, some people don't like them. But I do think, I think from what I could see, I think most people were really proud of, you know, and they're inspirational as well. You know, some of the fans that we met from Alberta, you know, actually said that it's quite inspiring for them that, you know, four guys can come and make it and then break out of the town and travel in a broken up van across Canada in all variety of conditions and weathers and really stick by their dreams, you know, and not get jaded by a lack of success that they clearly experienced in the beginning.
I wonder if maybe to some extent some of the internet outrage is just kind of faded, or if people have moved on to something else, or if there's sort of a begrudging respect for this band after all these years. Has it gone away?
Yeah, I think, you know, with like new platforms that are rising, TikTok in particular, you know, new fans are discovering their music on the back of little viral videos and stuff. They've got no attachment to the hate. They've got no attachment to the Nickelback story. They've got attachment to good music.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've discovered Nickelback via that route, but then they're not really aware of the hate as much. The amount of people have said, I didn't know they were the most hated band in the world at one point. it's quite funny. Like, people are genuinely shocked when you say that. But yeah, again, it's one or two articles, isn't it, that kind of set the scene for a lot of other things. And, you know, the world is full of half-truths, isn't it? There's no one truth. As such, it's just a degrees of it and opinions and viewpoints on certain subjects.
Really fascinating. Well, the film is called Hate to Love, Nickelback, as mentioned, in theaters this week, tomorrow, Wednesday night, and Saturday. So, and where else will people be able to see it after that, Lee?
I can't possibly reveal that. I think there are plans in motion, but I think now we're completely focused on the on the screenings, which the cinema release, which is tomorrow. So I, for one, will be going to see it in my hometown. It looks like it's a pretty good turnout in there. We keep looking at the ticket sales and stuff. So it's quite crazy to see that, our film that we worked on for 7 years is going to be screened across the world. Crazy.
That's pretty wild. Well, congrats on this. And again, Lee, thank you so much for making some time for us here today.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
That's Lee Brooks. He's a British filmmaker. He is a director of Love to Hate, Nickelback, the Nickelback documentary. So 30 countries around the world. So, yeah, Calgary, one of the cities where this film will be screening in theaters tomorrow and Saturday. So an opportunity to see it on the big screen. So your thoughts on some of those issues? I had a text here, 403-974-8255. Says it's like a national sport to hate on our Canadian artists who get really, really big. Celine, Bieber, Nickelback. It's weird because we don't seem to do it to actors or comedians. It is interesting. And those three, I think, kind of that's true. There's other examples. I mean, you know, Shania was a massive sensation, or Alanis Morissette. It wasn't really that level of it. But just sort of the implied, I don't know, corniness or cheesiness, like Justin Bieber and his cheesy teeny bop music, or Celine Dion with her cheesy, schmaltzy, over-the-top ballads. But I think with all three, it kind of got to the point where a lot of that just went away. And there's kind of, you know, respect for all three, especially, you know, Celine is kind of like our queen almost now, even though she was showing some love for the Boston Bruins last week. So everything she's gone through. I think it's a lot easier to love Celine these days. Even Justin Bieber, he kind of, you know, was laying low for a while. You see him, he was at the NHL All-Star game having some fun. I think, you know, as he's aged and maybe out of that kind of silly teeny bop era, maybe there's more respect for him. And I think same thing with Nickelback. A lot of that hate's kind of gone away. Not that they've won over all of their haters. They're not fans now, but it seems silly to get that worked up about a band and its music.
Thanks for downloading and listening to the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you find your podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Rob Breckenridge. And you can email me, rob@770chqr.com. Talk to you next time.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone.
Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.